All right, good evening. You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. My name is Sage. I'm of mixed European and Sawridge Cree ancestry.
I'm in third year and currently studying Oki. My name is Kenzie Littlelight. I'm Blackfoot and Sutina from Treaty 7 from Southern Alberta. And I'm in third year currently studying political science and law and society.
Hata Lasis di Hatagan Richard Yats Hatai Kih Hinu di Kiaung. Hi, my name is Richard. I'm a member of Old Massive Village Council in Haida Gwaii, and I'm in my second year of kinesiology and Indigenous studies.
My name's Tiana Carpenter. I'm Anishinaabe from Wabasmong First Nation in northwestern Ontario, and I'm a fourth year First Nations and Indigenous studies.
Anin Buju, Tiana Dishnakaz, Kishigonin Ojibwe Ninjijua. Hi, my name's Tiana Bone. I am from Treaty 2 Territory, Manitoba. I'm Anishinaabe, and I am currently in my fourth year, double majoring in First Nations and Indigenous Studies and Indigenous English Literature.
And we are your Indigenous collective here at CITR. Tonight we're going to be talking about Indigenous futurisms and politics, but before we get into that, we're just going to take a quick break and listen to a message from our sponsors. Yourself to run back to me. To me. Oh, no, this is a nightmare. Stop telling yourself to run back to me. 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 Stop telling yourself to run back to me. Cause we both know this a nightmare, not a dream. A dream. Stop telling yourself to run back to me.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
Okay, welcome back. We're going to start talking about politics, elections, Indigenous futurisms. We thought it was relevant to start given the recent elections. Justin Trudeau has obviously been quite a contentious figure in the last couple of years, especially with Indigenous communities. So we're sort of beating a dead horse to talk about it, but we're going to do it anyway. So let's start it off. Did anyone have any initial reactions to the election?
Yeah, I personally was very underwhelmed with the election. I was actually pretty underwhelmed throughout the whole debate process. As an Indigenous person watching the debate, the Indigenous topics that they talked about weren't really, it never really involved Indigenous communities. It was only really about the pipeline and Justin Trudeau and Andrew Scheer attacking each other. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the English debate, it really didn't frame any issues in relations to Indigenous communities, and also did not go into detail about treaties or how to provide restitution for treaties that have been broken. And it just kind of feels like we're continued on where we left off, basically. You know, with the issues with the Trans Mountain Pipeline going through with Trudeau's government, also the SNC-Lavalin case that happened, and you know, a lot of his platform highlights issues that were kind of already announced and talked about programs that were already existing. So we never really introduced any more Indigenous policies. It was kind of more in the way of continuing on of what he did, and continuing the work of eliminating boil water advisories. yeah, that's kind of what I thought about the election.
Tonight's episode is called Where Do We Go From Here? So I think that's probably, that sums
it
up.
Yeah, exactly. That's literally how I felt, is where we go from here. We don't know. It's pretty much where we left off, so.
No. Does anyone else have any initial reactions?
Yeah, I mean, I feel pretty much the same way. I'm pretty much on the side of being not really in line with the idea of, like, reconciliation, for what that means kind of in as a political term. So when it's thrown around in debates like that, it really just kind of goes over my head, because I don't feel the kind of the ability to kind of feel that in any real material way. So for me, it's kind of just a cycle at this point.
Yeah. I think in particular how Justin is already saying that the pipeline will go through. Like, it's not a frame of question or not. He's already instating those kind of violent words, and in how can we frame reconciliation under Justin Trudeau when he continues to speak in these ways, especially about contentious Indigenous issues.
Word. Myself and Tiana, there's two Tianas here tonight, so it's going to be a bit confusing. And they both live in the same house. So.
And they're both great.
But actually, all three of us, we live in Jody Wilson-Raybould's riding. And we were sort of like in our pre-discussion about this episode, sort of talking about the significance of having Indigenous representation in Parliament and sort of what that looks like and what that means. Tiana, I knew you have some. I know you have some things to say.
Just about MPs in general?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I thought it was really cool how this year we have one less MP in that has been elected into the Canadian or the federal House of Commons. Four of them, of the 10, are First Nations, and then four are Métis and two are Inuit. However, apparently there are some of the candidates whose identity are being contested, which is interesting to think about. But on another note, Jody Wilson, first independent to make it in, first Indigenous independent to make it in. I know, like, we were talking about what does that mean for Indigenous communities to have, like, an independent Indigenous MP.
Is this a floor question? Yeah. You opened up to the floor.
It's, her position is so strong, and what she has really contributed to Canadian politics. She's the only independent MP in Parliament right now. And, you know, as shady as this SNC-Lavalin scandal was, when we look at it, for me, it really showed how courageous it was for her to just go against, just to pretty much stand up for what she believes in and to be independent. And also, she's a very strong leader and encouraging people to stand up for truly what they believe in. And I think that's what we need in politics.
Yeah, likewise, kind of where I stand in politics, while I understand kind of the necessity to kind of navigate this to some degree, I really like the stance that she has, that she's very unapologetically like leaving the Liberal Party because she doesn't align with that and doing what she thinks is right. And it's paid off. Like, clearly there is something in her voice that people love and are kind of quoting with. And I mean, we're going to tie it in a little bit later, but this idea of kind of like where we go as Indigenous communities and kind of the futurisms of Indigenous politics, I think she's definitely kind of one of the foundations for that.
I was just going to say, I think what I find so great about JWR, is that she really, like, held the system accountable. And I think, like, the symbolism of an Indigenous woman holding a system that has historically, like, disenfranchised her people is rad. And I think that even though the system is still sort of messed up and I don't agree with, like, the liberal policies, and I know that she's still sort of in line politically with them, like, she hasn't super changed her platform, I still think that that, like, that was such a huge symbolic move on her part. So, and she's just overall pretty badass.
I'm also really happy she's in my writing. So
true.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, so much intersectionality of, like, the fact that she's Indigenous, and not only that, but an Indigenous woman in politics. It's, like, going to all my memers out there. Like, the meme of, like, going in Tuesday morning with her and Justin Trudeau. Like,
yeah.
Go off. Yes.
Tiana, you had some stuff to say about MPs who have not gone into the House of Commons.
Yeah, so even though I was in Jody's riding in Vancouver, I chose to vote in my riding back in the Kenora riding, who had the chief of Grassy Narrows, Rudy Turtle, running for the NDP candidate. And he did not make it in the House of Commons, which I was very sad to see, particularly because we now have a conservative candidate. Yes. yeah, and I think particularly about the way Jagmeet had come into the community itself and promised that he would do something about the mercury poisoning that is deeply affecting that community, as well as my community, who are both on the Wabagoon River system. And how, if we want to go back on the Trudeau hate train, how he has yet to actually give the money that he has promised. He promised $89 million for them to build a mercury facility in their community, because it's a large travel for a lot of those people who are affected by the mercury poisoning. And so he had promised this money, and Rudy has been publicly calling him out for a while to actually put forth the money he promised back in 2017. Mm-hmm. So I was very sad to see that Rudy didn't make it in, but there's lots of work still to be done.
Yeah, that's really sad. Because, you know, like, you are a prime example of a person that's actually affected by these boil water advisories. And I was looking online, and 48 hours after Trudeau's win, he said that he would promise to make sure reconciliation, quote, was not just a word, unquote. And I feel like that's something that we've had to live by for, like, the last 4 years. Even though I was pretty underwhelmed with the elections, I'm just still relieved that Scheer didn't get it.
True.
Trudeau.
So in honor of Rudy Turtle, our noble leader, but not quite. Not yet.
He's still a leader of the...
He's still a leader in the community.
He's still calling Trudeau out. He's doing the work.
He's doing the good fight. So in honor of that, we're going to send this next song out to Rudy. Because he has what? What was your... You were like, what song has...
Uncle vibes.
Big uncle energy.
So this next song has some big
were
uncle
you Rudy?
Energy.
Okay. Let's see. This is a big...
I've been driving in my Indian car to the pound of the wheels drumming in my brain. My dash is dusty, my plates are expired. Please, Mr. Officer, let me explain.
I got to make it to a powwow tonight. I'll be singing 49 down by the riverside, looking for sugar, riding in my Indian car. Got my T-bird in the glove box, I ain't got no spare. Got a feather from an eagle, I ain't got no care. The road is empty in my bottle of desire. Daylight is breaking, the sun touches fire. I got to make another powwow tonight. I'll be singing 49 down by the riverside, looking for sugar, riding in my Indian car. The radiator steams, one headlight don't work, the radio can scream. I got a sticker that says Indian Power, I stuck it on a bumper, that's what holds my car together. We're on a circuit of an Indian dream. We don't get old, we just get younger, when we're flying down the highway, riding in our Indian car. On the circuit of an Indian dream. We don't get old, we just get younger, when we're flying down the highway, riding in our Indian car. Riding in our Indian car. Riding in our Indian car.
Welcome back to Unceded Airwaves. That was Indian Car by Keith Sekola. So coming back to the conversation of kind of this week's talk about politics, for the upcoming year, we're going to be dedicating this time to talk about Indigenous futurisms. And so kind of just to give a background of what that is, if you may not be familiar, it has a basis in literature, art, and mixed media. But it basically just talks about the past, the present, and future of where Indigenous people are going. So at the moment, it feels a lot in politics, and really just in most conversations, there's definitely a deficiency kind of start to conversations like talking about health disparities in Indigenous communities, et cetera, which are all very valid points and need to be addressed. But I think we also need to kind of talk about the grassroots and the MPs that are coming in that are stirring the pot, if you will. But yeah, for me, Indigenous futurisms definitely has a place in, I guess, unpopular opinion, anti-conciliatory kind of places of not really fitting in with Western politics, I suppose. And really putting forward kind of women and queer experiences, because I think that has direct relation to kind of land expropriation and really just our relations. But how does everyone else feel about Indigenous futurisms?
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I, Richard, the other day, where we had the opportunity to be in a workshop with Leanne Simpson.
Yes.
Shout out to Leanne. And I really love how she frames Indigenous futurisms specifically in an Anishinaabe way, where futurisms is kind of how you take care of yourself and your relations in the present so that you have that future. Mm-hmm. And I think all of our Indigenous kin, no matter our political, whatever is happening in there, we are always taking care of each other. And I think even through our conversations we've had outside of the radio, I love that we're still taking care. And I mean, that's the care and the love is kind of what I see in the future.
Preach.
Okay, so for me, Indigenous futurisms is when I that term comes to my head, the first thing that comes up is the youth and children. I constantly think about where my future children or my nephew or my younger cousins will be in the future, or what issues or where they'll be basically in the future. And I think it's really important what we're doing, you know, taking care of each other, just like what Richard and Tiana said before me, taking what we know and our knowledge from our past, preserving it and bringing it into our future kin, so that it could help them in the future, basically. And another big thing that can help with this personally to me would be representation. I think representation is such a big contributor to inspiring youth. It's something that I never really had as a kid personally, seeing people that look like me in the media or just anywhere. But I think where we're going is honestly in the right direction, because I feel like for Native children to be seeing themselves on the TV or magazines or whatever, honestly, anything, it really lets them see that it really puts into perspective for them that they see themselves in the world when they see that. And that's what it means to me.
For me, mine's similar to Kenzie's in representation. It was a lot less political, I guess, because for me, I loved reading young adult fiction where it was all about utopia, dystopian worlds. So, it was just not seeing Indigenous representation in those kinds of places and spaces of literary work. Growing up, it was a lot of like Hunger Games and supernatural fiction, like Twilight, unfortunately.
There's some Indigenous representation in there.
It was not Taylor Lautner, though.
I don't mean to be a traitor, but like I was actually Team Edward.
Yeah.
Who doesn't honestly like some glitter? Like going off of the representation, I think we're definitely in an interesting space of where you had kind of like the Red Power and those movements, grassroots, where there wasn't really the media accessibility that we have now, and that these things were all happening and people were aware, but it's because it was the only kind of access that you had, where now it's you have like Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, whatever the medium may be, and that is like a whole different element of representation, and also allows people to take Indigenous identity and activism into whatever kind of spectrum they want, whether that be health, beauty. I mean, you have like incredible fashion designers up and coming that are carving out spaces for each other as well. But yeah.
Also bringing it back, talking about politics again, I also wanted to bring up with the representation, a newly elected MP, I'm sorry, I'm totally going to butcher her name, but her name is Mamalak Kwaku. I'm so sorry. Don't mean.
Yeah.
But she is a newly elected MP from the North, and she's Inuit. She's from Nunavut. She's only 25, and I pulled up a quote, and she says, "I'm passionate, and know what I'm talking about." And I really think her whole campaign was about, she's all about passion, and it doesn't matter
how young she is. She knows what she's talking about because she's from the North. Especially, she comes from a place where there's not a lot of representation for the North. And I think for the youth in the North, they'll finally have, you know, someone to look up to that are actually fighting for their, for things that affect their community, like high costs of living and food, and the high risks of suicide that happens up there. It's really nice and refreshing to see someone like her representing the community up North, because even I don't really hear a lot about the North. It's very secluded and kind of alienated at most times.
Yeah, some really cool stuff coming up with Indigenous MPs, representation, obviously, and really fitting into the conversation tonight and for this year on Indigenous Futurisms. We're going to take another quick break and hear a PSA, and then when we come back, we're going to keep talking about sovereignty, futurisms, indigeneity, all that good stuff. So we will see you in a short minute.
What I found for World Without Music.
Bleak and dreary and empty.
Boring.
Really boring.
I wouldn't say dead, but...
Really grim.
Disaster.
It's a world I don't want to live in.
Luckily, we don't have to live in that world. And if keeping music alive in this world is important to you, come out to the fundraiser for CITR's music department. It's happening Saturday, November 9th at Redgate, and will feature the musical stylings of local favorites Ponytails, Sleepy Gonzales, and Kylie V. Doors at 8, $10 suggested donation at the door, though no one turned away for lack of funds. That's Saturday, November 9th. Come shake a leg and show your love for CITR's music department.
Wow, that sounds lit.
Alrighty, so we're back. We're going to keep talking about futurisms tonight. I think we covered politics, and politics is sort of inherent in a lot of the conversation that we're going to be having, but we want to focus on the good stuff, the resurgence, the reconciliation, grassroots from communities. So starting it out, what do we think about futurism in general? I mean, I think I came at futurism from a bit of a weird little spot. I really like science fiction. I'm sorry, I hate to say it. I'll admit it right here. I love science fiction. And I think it's really cool that people are able to sort of like project this narrative into the future. And a lot of people, a lot of like Afrofuturists and Indigenous futurism folks have critiqued science fiction as just completely wiping a lot of identities and a lot of people out. And I can attest to that. I've read some like old school science fiction. In which I literally bought the other day, they were having a sale at UBC in the Nest. They often do this. There was like a science fiction crew of people selling books, and it was 2 for $1. And I was like, a deal? Okay. So I wandered up and I grabbed a couple, and one of them was like the something Politics of Man. And the like the cover inside was like all the men that govern the planets, like, and I read like 2 pages. I was like, I gotta go. And then I got another one, and because the front cover was really cool, like science fiction. I think we can all admit the front covers of science fiction pretty dope. Yeah, so cool. And I was like, sweet alien gal, like fighting something. I'm in. And I opened the cover, and like there's a paragraph explanation about what this one character looked like. And somehow it was like the girl was like wearing something in a way that made it look like she was not wearing it at all. I was like, okay, well, first of all, problematic. And I think that kind of complete anecdote on my behalf, and I'm sorry about that. But I think that kind of stuff is like, even though it's just a story and it's so silly and like only nerds read them, that kind of projection that just like completely wipes out people. Like, we have to take an issue with that, and that has to be discussed.
I think it was last Thursday for class, for my English lit class, we had to watch Mad Max Fury Road, and that has, like, a whole bunch of, like, futurisms without Indigenous people. Or my professor, Dr. Dallas Hunt, went on to talk about how there's always this trope in of indigenous people in like futuristic places where the indigenous person will be giving some kind of gift that the white people can take back to their heavily polluted places and it will save them. But in order for the indigenous person to give that gift, they also have to die. They have to be gone. So the white people can live forever, but like the indigenous people, they gotta go.
We have like Avatar where like the gift is the white guy. Yeah. He's like, I'm come to save you.
Yeah.
White saviorism. For myself, kind of with where my studies are based in kinesiology, I definitely have a health basis that I'm coming from. But also with indigenous studies and just kind of living that experience myself, I see the intersectionality of like what wellness and health means going into the future and kind of bringing that back to community, that there's so much weight in language revitalization, improving our relationships, not just like with each other, whether that be cross-generational or within the LGBT community, but also with our non-human kin, so like the land, etc. I think that's one of the bases that going forward is going to benefit communities most and is going to really facilitate that revitalization in a broader context.
Where do you guys, like, because I don't know if I, like, explicitly think about Indigenous futurism on a daily basis, but I think I explicitly think about Indigenous futurism on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So where do you guys find that you're, like, doing that the most?
On the bus.
Elaborate.
When I'm, like, zoned out and or, like, half asleep, I'm like, oh, yeah, this idea. Great. Mm. No, I honestly, it's usually like when I'm inside of university, just like walking around and I look around me, I'm like, oh, I'm in UBC. And it's kind of this weird kind of push and pull of getting an education and learning more. And like the things that I'm able to articulate now really come from the fact that I've been here, but also the fact that it like is actively occupying land and space, which like unceded airwaves, yeah, we're taking that back, but I think it's really just like, yeah, like subconsciously when you're walking around, it's something that you're kind of is in the back of your mind because it is part of your lived experience. But yeah, also want to like apologize, my voice is kind of going, so it's kind of a little croaky.
Okay, well,
well, back to, I can relate to what Richard says. I think we can all relate to what Richard says. I often think about the exact same things when I'm in my classes. I'm in a lot of humanitarian classes. You know, when I read Indigenous topics, they're usually not very fun topics. They always kind of talk about traumas and, you know, just kind of the bad stuff altogether, and it really does kind of affect you. Like, you don't know until you just don't know until you know. Like, it's just, it literally, it filters your head into everything that you think of. And I don't want to say which class, but in a class we had to sit in like basically a circle and kind of talk about like what you thought of like of a certain Indigenous struggle in like the book we were talking about, or what struggle did you think was the most interesting type of thing. And it's kind of weird because, you know, being from the city all my life, I've always kind of been in that position through schooling where I'm pretty much the only Native person in my classes. In university, I finally found my my friends and my own support group, which is amazing. But honestly, that is why representation does mean a lot to me, because, you know, children have to deal with this all the time. A lot of Native children have to deal with this, hearing about the bad stuff. And I really do hope that we can bring some positivity to the future.
And just like going off of that, it's really something actively that I have to do too, is not going in with that deficiency mm-hmm. kind of perspective, because it really, from like when you're a child, you're taught to think that way. And it's actively trying to see not necessarily like the positives in situations, but the positive things like coming out or going into those situations, whether that is grassroots or, I mean, even to like our professors here at UBC, the ones that are doing that work that needs to be done of trying to decolonize the education, and that are advocating for that kind of content. Like, hats off to you.
True. I feel like I think about this the most in the classes where there isn't an mm-hmm. Indigenous discussion, like nothing gets brought up. Or if it is, it's like, this is this problem, like, asymmetrically affects Indigenous populations. Next. Like,
yeah. Check off.
Yeah. They're like, okay, done. And I think those are the classrooms where I'm like, oh, wow. Like, everyone in this room, I'm studying international relations and political science. So I'm generally in rooms where I'm like, okay, all these people are going into government. They're going into like other things. And like this discussion that we all just had, like no one has like the understanding or like the willingness or like, you know, whatever, the theoretical framework. Like, I don't know. But like, those are the classrooms where I'm like the most concerned. Because when I take like an FNIS class or, you know, something where there's like an Indigenous component to it, and a lot of folks in those classrooms have like an Indigenous background or like an understanding, appreciation, like a willingness to look at things from an Indigenous perspective, in those rooms, I'm like, okay, like it's possible. When I think about futurism the most, it's when I'm in those other classrooms where I'm like, like, what boardroom is that person going to be sitting in 6 years making a decision about people that I love and care about? Mm-hmm. Bleak. I'm sorry.
Well, and it's so important too to have those kinds of people in the room, like, or sorry, not them, but like Indigenous voices for one, but really cross-cultural and cross-gender and sexuality lenses, because those conversations have to happen and need to be addressed. And if it's just like a bunch of middle-aged white men that are in a room, like, what are you talking about? Your suits? Who?
I think the sad reality too for a lot of people that are only the only person in those rooms is that's a lot of emotional labor yeah. for them.
Oh, RT, retweet. Yeah.
RT. And like, I mean, I've often been in those classrooms where you look around and you're like, oh, sick, it's just me. And you have a professor who's clearly very uneducated about Indigenous content and Indigenous theory. But, you know, they're just giving a go at it and it's terrible. And then you kind of have to sit with yourself and be like, am I going to tell? Do I feel like telling them off today? You got to like do like a self-check. Like, is today, okay, yeah, I'm feeling it. Like, let's go. And then you never know how your prof's going to really respond as well.
Or when they like make eye contact with you because you're like that token kid. Yeah. Like, oh. Hey, friend.
I see you.
My favorite reaction to that is like not talking in class, but like writing it in my papers, because you know your prof is gonna read it and be like, "I'm talking to you."
Adam, let that tea steep for a bit.
Yeah,
so passive aggressive. I love it. Yeah.
In the future, we'll add our profs. Don't we? Yeah.
So, I had a point that I wanted to talk about, and I don't remember who the specific person that kind of coined this term, but it was in a podcast with Sarah Hunt, shout out, but talking about like consensual allyship, and I guess relating that to politics, I suppose, but also even in university, what it means to kind of identify as an ally for Indigenous issues versus being accepted into that community. Which I think can definitely be used to like analyze a relationship that we have with professors and even just like with students of, I don't know, the authority to speak and or like what is enough as action versus putting on a shirt that says decolonize.
Mm. Any thoughts on what was the? Can you repeat the term?
Consensual allyship.
Oh.
I know it rolls off the tongue.
It really does. Yeah. Any thoughts? I think I definitely have people in my life that are like supportive and knowledgeable, but it's also because I have taken the time, or they have reached out and like made me feel comfortable in other ways where I can be like, hey, this is something that's like difficult for me, like in this given environment or whatever. This is like an intersectionality that you might not understand, but I feel comfortable telling you about. Mm-hmm. And then I have some people where I'm like, nope.
Not today.
Not today.
Well, I think we all kind of, well, for me, I never really had the support of just like through UBC, I was actually able to find a lot of my closest friends, all my Indigenous friends. I've also been opened up to a lot of opportunities to share my voice just like through this unceded airwaves. So, you know, just honestly really thankful for the support that I'm able to fall back on. And I know if I have an issue with something, it's most likely that another one of my friends has the same issue. Yeah.
I'll bring it back around. also just kind of relating it back to politics, which I don't want to go too far into, but just the idea of kind of power structures and relationships, I think that it, like, just in the way that I think that reconciliation has been kind of used to weaponize against Indigenous people, I think that this allyship also has, where you have politicians that are still working in a colonial framework that are saying that they're allies to Indigenous people, but what are you actually actively doing to help us? And like, there's a lot more weight that needs to be put into those relationships. I mean, to be fair, since the conceptualization of the Indian Act and really treaties, like, relationships haven't been respected that much. But I think, again, looking to the future, I think that's something that needs to be held more accountable. And, yeah, let's go, politicians.
I think something that kind of goes along the lines of consensual allyship as well is body sovereignty, especially if we're talking about, I know we hate going back to the political stance, but
let's go there.
The ways in which colonial violence manifests in our bodies, specifically looking at the ways where missing and murdered women and girls, Two-Spirit women and girls are highly affected by the state and state violence and how that manifests and how body sovereignty and the issue, or not the, the topic of consent goes hand in hand in that.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. There's a lot that we've already covered tonight, and a lot of conversations that I think we could go even more in depth. Body sovereignty, consensual allyship, politics. We only have a few more minutes. Is there any like burning questions, burning topics that are on any of our minds? Ooh.
Land back.
If not, I think we will take a couple minutes, or like, you know, a couple seconds each, just to reintroduce ourselves. I'll give you a little rundown on how this show is going to be working for the next year. We have a huge group of intelligent, awesome, rad Indigenous students. So we actually have too many people to have just one crew. So we're going to have bi-weekly, we're going to have two different groups. We're going to rotate, so you're going to get to know all of our voices, all of our thoughts and opinions. And it's going to be a wild ride. So my name is Sage, one last time, and then we'll take it around the circle.
My name is Kenzie. Is that all I say?
I mean, say as much as you want.
Okay.
Your time.
My name is Kenzie Littlelight.
I'm in third year. I'm also from Treaty 7. I'm Blackfoot and Sutina, and yeah.
Hata lasis di hatagung. My name is Richard. I am Haida. I am a language learner, and I'm really trying to kind of incorporate that in every day. And I'm just happy to be here.
Yay, Richard.
I am Tiana Carpenter. We're over in the Anishinaabe's corner with Tiana Squared. But my name's Tiana Carpenter. I am Anishinaabe from Wabasmong First Nation. I am also very happy to be here. Wow, what a crew.
Oh my God.
I'm Tiana Bone, the other half of Tiana Squared. I'm Anishinaabe from Kisikunin, Ojibwe First Nation, which is in Treaty 2 territory, Manitoba. And yeah, I'm excited to see what this year of Futurisms has for us.
I'm really excited to see where this show will go. Today was a good round, you know, we can get more used to it. Super nervous.
In the future.
In the future.
Indigenous futures.
We'll be there.
Whoa, meta.
So thank you all for listening tonight. We have a whole year of awesome material for you coming up. We're going to be addressing all sorts of topics under the umbrella of Indigenous Futurisms. We're really stoked about it, and we hope you are too. To send you out tonight, we thought we would bring in an Indigenous icon, Buffy St. Marie. So with that, we are out.
not run! Run!